And of course, we're going to take your calls this hour with William Mann, author of Templar Sanctuaries in North America. And we'll get to your calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with William Mann and your phone calls as well. Now, you continue to do some interesting work as a landscape architect, do you not?
Not as a landscape architect, George. In essence, I am a registered landscape architect, planner, and forester.
Perfect.
Here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, I'm the chief administrative officer of a multinational corporation here in Canada with over 500 employees.
Why? Good for you.
I do have a day job.
And I'm keeping you up very late tonight.
No. Actually, I'm usually up about 3 o'clock anyway.
So. Okay, good. Would you have hidden these treasures where you think they are now? Is that the great spot to hide them?
That's the greatest spot to hide them. If you know Montana at all, there's a series of abandoned mines, caves, all of those things within the foothills of the Rockies. That's the beauty of the nature. The Knights Templar always assumed earlier foundations and built upon them.
How do you think they found Montana?
Well, I believe that they had ancient knowledge of Montana even before they got there. They were following in the footsteps of those that came before them, the Norse, the Egyptians. A series of secret societies knew that there was a so-called New World opposite to the Old World.
That's exciting. It really is. Do you think there can ever be anything organized to go look for these?
Oh, absolutely. I'm hoping maybe Barack Obama, now that he's retiring, maybe he'll come with us.
Interesting take. What are the odds of you being wrong that there's nothing there?
Well, all I can say is that this is the basis of a life's work of 60 years. And as they say, if I'm wrong, I'll eat my hat.
How many people do you think it took, William, to move the treasure there?
Well, we're talking multi-generations. We're talking over 300 years at a single time. It's rumored that Prince Henry Sinclair had a community of about 1,000 people and a whole series of ships available.
My God.
But remember, he also had the help of the entire indigenous population in North America at the time.
Now, it's dry out there, mountains and deserts. How did they get it there?
Up the Missouri River very easily.
But then from there, what did they do? Cart it up there? Stagecoach? What?
No, they just carted it up there. Essentially, it's they would be able to move it up by barge up the Missouri River to the end, to Townsend, and from there, it's just a hop, short hop, skip, and a jump.
That's it.
I should mention that one thing I've also discovered in my readings. I believe that Thomas Jefferson, being initiated into a number of lodges in France when he was the minister from America just prior and after the American Revolution, he was exposed to certain inklings or secrets of the treasure. And I think he instructed these were the secret instructions that Meriwether Lewis received prior to his journey of esprit.
That's amazing. Okay, let's take some calls for you. Jesse in Virginia, welcome to the show. Hi, Jesse.
What's going on, George?
All is well.
I just had a couple quick questions. These things are really worth fueling up in my head here. One being the Knights Templar. I want to know what their view is on the New World Order, and world government. Also, I wanted to know why it is that the KKK uses Knights Templar imagery and symbolism in their rituals and things like that, and also in their dress. Also, I wanted to know if there's any chance that Ted Cruz may be tied to Knights Templar and also the North American community.
All right. What can you answer for any of those three questions, William?
Well, it's always an interesting question. I know that a lot of people in the States are fascinated by the relationship between the so-called historical aspects of the Knights Templar. A number of orders over the years, for whatever reason, either sinister or for good, have assumed certain attributes of the Knights Templar. That's not to say that the Knights Templar are associated with the New World Order, with the Ku Klux Klan, but you can appreciate that various aspects of the morality, the chivalry that the Templars originally portrayed have been assumed by certain groups for their own purposes. There were groups within the Civil War, the Southern Knights, that Knights of the Golden Dawn, Knights of the Golden Circle, that assumed that they were reincarnates of the Knights Templar and used it for their own purposes. But there's nothing sinister in relation to the Knights Templar in their history. Essentially, they were a military order, and like any military order, they were they had certain high morale, certain levels of loyalty that they demonstrated that are still demonstrated through any military order across North America and around the world today.
I would take that they didn't know anything about a New World Order, did they?
No, not at all. No. Not at all. And essentially, their morals have been hijacked by a variety of groups to provide credence to their rather more nefarious escapades that they're involved in today.
There was a point they had full allegiance with the Pope, and then something happened. What happened?
Well, it's obvious that the Knights Templar came to possess something that threatened the Pope and threatened the Church. And it's for that reason that the Church conspired with the French monarchy to obliterate them. The long and the short of it was that both the Church and the state were into the Knights Templar for a lot of money. They probably lost it during a poker game. A big poker game that's still being played. So the way it was applied there, I really don't think that there's any association there, and I really don't like to comment on its application to politics, particularly American politics.
Keith in Connecticut on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Hi. What a thrill. I never thought in my lifetime I would be speaking to a real
Templar,
a real live one. But my question has to do with the warrior aspect of the Knights. As we know, they started as great warriors. Could somebody call on a group, maybe the Knights Templar now, because to fight to kind of be an army to fight terrorism throughout the world? Could the Knights Templar kind of reactivate in that sense?
They could.
I don't see that happening.
I like to see it maybe approached in a different manner. As we know that there's a number of conflicts around the world, and they'll continue to sprout up, and as soon as you obliterate one enemy, another enemy will take its place. I really think that the Knights Templar have a certain facet and a certain obligation to perhaps provide mediation to facilitate an everlasting peace. Now, peace can be gained two ways, through understanding, acknowledgement, and through moral ends, or it can be achieved through the exertion of certain powers over other powers. That's the moral to the story. I believe that the world right now is one screwed up place, and it really needs some group or some individual to step forward and to provide that guidance.
I'm not sure we'll ever get that, though.
I'm not sure whether we'll ever get that because, you know, as politics as it plays, it's very hard to find somebody without a personal agenda or ego.
Indeed. Okay, let's go to Edith in St. George, Utah. Hi, Edith. Welcome to the show.
Hello. My father was a Knight Templar.
Oh, was he? Okay.
He wore a uniform, and the hat that he wore looked like Napoleon's hat. We still have the hat. We still have his uniform. But when the book that he had, I never read it because I belong to the Easter Star and I do know it's sacred. So my sister wanted to keep it. I told her no, so I took it back to the Knight Templars, gave it to the head Knight Templar in Tampa, Florida. Now, my father joined the Templars when he was in 1940, and he also belonged to the Masonic Order. He belonged to the Eastern Star. He belonged to the Amaranth, and he belonged to the Scottish Rite. And he helped each and every person. And the Knight Templars also learned a language. And when he was learning the language, he would not let us in the room with him. He would lock himself in the room, and he would learn the language out of this book. And he was wonderful. He helped anybody, everybody. And I wanted to read the book, but I knew it was sacred, so I took it back to the order. And there's Nine Templars are in Tampa, Florida, and they're nice people.
Well, there's a few out there, William, huh?
Yes, absolutely. And some of my best friends are Templars in the United States. In the United States, it's known as the Grand Encampment. But I think Edith just reflects the bottom line. It's like my father and my great uncles. The men that I've met have been pure gentlemen, very humble, very kind. And I think that's reflective of the order in itself. In terms of exposing secrets, I've gone to a number of the highest ranking men around the world and said, am I actually exposing any secrets? And they say, no, my good boy, it's time that you actually put some of those out there, that they understand that we're not secretive, that we're not evil, that we're just tended to keep to ourselves. It was an internal brotherhood. But the Knights Templar, Christian Masons around the world, the Shriners, have done wonderful charitable things, and we should all be proud of that. And I think Edith is reflective of just reflecting back on the way her father was. And I think that's, again, the moral to the story, that we should all aspire to that type of level.
How would you have handled yourself, conducted yourself, if you were living back during the, 1100s?
Well, there's power through might, but there's a very silent power. I find that if you maintain a certain lifestyle, a certain, I would call it clean living, a certain level of enlightenment, a certain rigidness, self-discipline, it's amazing what you can accomplish.
We have a first-time caller in Charleston, South Carolina. John, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, good morning, guys.
How morning, John. Good.
All right, I'm a Freemason and also a Knights Templar myself here in Charleston, South Carolina. And I've just been really confused as to, you say you've done a lot of research as far as Knights Templar goes. Are you yourself a Mason?
Yes, I am, John.
You are, okay. And what lodge are you going to?
I go to a lodge here in Canada, Oakville Lodge. I belong to Royal Chapter, Salem Council. I belong to the Conclave, Knights Templar on the York side, and 32nd degree Scottish Rite on the Scottish Rite side.
Okay, so you went through the York Rite and the Scottish Rite. And...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, yeah, because a lot of what you're saying is a little conflicting as far as, how much truth is in it, and basically you wouldn't have, your uncle wouldn't have been able to tell you anything back in when you say he told you, because obviously it's filing an oath. So that was why I had a question, is why you were, if you were a Mason or not.
No, I am, John. And the whole thing is that now's the time to really start to expose. There's no secrets associated with Masonry. As we all know, it's secretive. Now's the time to expose really what we know or don't know. And I find that many in Masonry don't really understand the ritual and ceremony that we practice and the morals associated to them. So the world could be a better place if they were practiced by more people.
How many Masons are there?
From my understanding, there's approximately 9 million in North America.
9 million?
That's great.
And they're good people, aren't they?
Oh, terrific people. I haven't met one bad Mason.
Don't you put on the Shriners festivals and fundraisers and things like that?
Exactly. And, you know, the work that they've done over the years in terms of building hospitals and treating sick children around the world is really second to none. Knights Templar Foundation here in Canada, I'm a director, and it provides millions of dollars to eye research to a variety of hospitals.
Why do people think Masons are sinister?
Oh, I really don't know. I guess it's the whole history, the whole secretness of the order. And this is the really silliness to it all. It's time that, because Masonry is dying off. A lot of people were their uncles, their great uncles, Edith was talking about the secretness. A lot of people don't even realize that people within their own families were Masons. And this has really had to change.
Joe in the Bronx, you're on Coast to Coast. Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Good.
I wanted to ask William Mann, you touched on it briefly earlier. Is there a way to verify, because you mentioned that people who belong to Jesus' bloodline don't know it. There are so many that don't know it. Is there a way to verify or confirm that?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that I believe the Knights Templar were ahead of their day. They realized that the relics and the bones that they possessed of certain members of the Holy Bloodline would ultimately one day prove to be the ultimate test through DNA testing. I don't think we're absolutely there yet, but this is one of the notions that if relics and bones associated with the Holy Bloodline are discovered and properly tested, that you could prove that through DNA testing that you were a member of the bloodline.
In your book, we talk about new evidence. What would you say the new evidence is that shows that they definitely crossed into North America?
Well, new evidence is coming to light every day that people believed at one point that the earth was flat once you got out of the Mediterranean Sea. So there's new evidence in terms of encampments. There's a lady who's a professor from Atlanta that's just discovered a second Viking settlement in Newfoundland. Remember that Prince Henry St. Clair, part of his bloodline were the Norse. He was a Norse lord. In essence, he was following in the footsteps of the Vikings and the Norse that came before him. So the evidence that's coming to light are these essentially hidden settlements.
Are there any pictures that depict what the treasure looked like?
No, not
and, really. And I don't mean photographic, obviously, but I mean sketches, drawings.
Well, you can go through the Bible and look at if there's illustrations within the Bible. Now, those are just conceptual pictures, but we talked about all the artifacts and relics that were absconded with from the second destruction of the temple.
Okay, well, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls with our special guest, William Mann, Templar Sanctuaries in North America. I will be living it up in Asheville, North Carolina with our live stage show event August 27th, so come on out. You know, originally I just said come on out from the greater Asheville area. Come on from everywhere, St. Louis, Chicago, New York, L.A. Come on, let's have a great time in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm told it is gorgeous out there. Live stage show, full information at coasttocoastam.com. You'll see the picture in the highlight reel. Just click it, and then you can order your tickets and pick your own seats, too. And welcome back, William Mann with us, of course, and your final phone calls. Where do we get your book, Templar Sanctuaries in North America?
It's available through my publisher, innertraditions.com. It's also available via Amazon or any of the larger bookstores across North America.
Was this an easy book or difficult for you, William, to put together?
It's never easy.
It's complicated.
It's complicated, putting together the 500-piece puzzle. In essence, this one took me about 10 years of research and putting together the puzzle, but I believe that the ending result is I'm very proud of it in terms of the way it reads and the way it comes together. It's not an easy topic to describe or to lay down on paper.
What is do you think, in your opinion, the most remarkable piece of treasure that could be hidden away?
I think the most remarkable piece of treasure is the knowledge that allows one to achieve a higher level enlightenment that brings you closer to God, that allows you to communicate directly with God.
Fascinating work, my friend.
Thank you very much.
You must be proud of it.
I am. I am very proud of it. But as you can see from some of your readers, everybody approaches it on a different level. I get a little frustrated when people start to think that this knowledge can't be generated by human mankind. It has to be generated by extraterrestrials or supernatural powers. To me, it was just a group of men that came together for a higher level, a higher purpose, and were able to achieve great things. And that's another moral to the story.
Do you think they ever realized just how much worth that treasure would be?
I think the inner circle did. I think, but you know what? That's the interesting thing, is that the tantalizing thing that's caused this story to perpetuate itself for thousands of years? Or is there a higher level meaning to the treasure? Is it what's come together through civilization? Does it demonstrate mankind's ability to transcend time and money?
Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hello, George, and thank you.
Sure thing.
William Mann, you made a statement in the first hour of your interview about 18 minutes past the hour. You said that the Jesuits chased the Templars once they got here in North America all the way across North America. Now, I'm going to ask a question about that, but let me just kind of build up to it a little bit, give you a little background on what my thinking is about this. We have heard here on Coast to Coast many, many guests over the years tell us about the Jesuits. And one of the most prominent guests was Malachi Martin, who himself worked for more than one pope at the Vatican, and a lot of people equate him to being like our CIA director for the Vatican. Now, he told us in his 1990 book, The Keys of This Blood, that Pope John Paul II was determined to be the leader of a new world order. And he goes into great detail, it's a very thick book, he goes into great detail about his contest with Mikhail Gorbachev to get that accomplished. Now, here's my question. If the Jesuits were so intense that they would chase the Templars all the way across North America, and if what many guests say here on Coast to Coast is true, that Jesuits take every form and every disguise, that means that a Bill Clinton, who was educated at Georgetown University, I believe that's run by Jesuits, or almost anybody, a Donald Trump, could be a Jesuit in disguise. So, if they have this goal of a new world order that Malachi Martin told us about, don't you think it possible that the chase is still going on?
I think so. I think I think you've encapsulated some of the most interesting aspects of the church over time. Ask yourself right now, is the current pope a Jesuit? I believe he is. So, but the whole thing is that Pope Francis is expounding upon a new level of kindness and gentleness. All I can say is because I grew up in a Jesuit environment myself. Unfortunately, if you're familiar with the residential schools situation across North America, the Native Indians, it was almost a genocide. It was a planned destruction of one's own beliefs and civilization. And absorbing him into the Jesuit world, and unfortunately that turned out very badly.
As a Templar, do you think this is the last pope?
I would hope so. On one level, you know, all of a sudden I can imagine all your readers falling off their chairs.
And my listeners.
All your listeners. I can, on one level, I would love to see that. I would love to see.
Why?
Well, the Vatican for 2,000 years has perpetuated certain myths, and there have been so many evil things that have been done in the name of God. I really don't think you need a guiding organization to allow one to individually make up their mind in terms of whether there's a supreme being, a God out there. I think people have to look within, have to look for guidance amongst themselves, not look for guidance to be told what they should be practicing, not practicing.
What happens to the Vatican Bank?
Well, that's a good question. Sounds like, George, you and I, you especially, you want to go over and be handed the keys.
Keys to the Vatican Bank, that's right.
Yeah.
And the treasure, too.
Yeah, you could become the Vatican treasurer.
Andy in Connecticut, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, Andy, no, I'm sorry. This is Ed, George, but thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Are you in Connecticut? Do I have the right state?
I am in
Connecticut. Okay, great.
William, my question, it's funny you were just talking about banks, because I was just reading up on the Knights Templar and how, because of their wealth, the modern banking system is because of the Knights Templar.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, and then my other question was, regards to the treasure, is it plausible that it's only able to be accessed during certain times of the year, maybe two?
You've been reading up. We talked about earlier on the show about the myths and the legends associated with the treasure. One of the myths and legends is that it's only accessible at certain times of the year. Obviously, the Knights Templar possessed levels of knowledge on many levels, and in order for them to secure a treasure, and wouldn't you have to know the combination? What better combination would be than to associate the opening of the vault with the Four Seasons?
If you were living during that era, William, how would you be conducting yourself?
Probably the same way, without the technology.
Would you flee if they were coming after you, if it was that Friday the 13th?
Well, you have to remember that the Templars, you alluded to it, they could have made a stand, and they could probably even defeated the forces, but they chose not to. They chose the way of peace. They were looking for that alternative Jerusalem, the one that they had lost. In essence, the moral to that is that it's not an actual place, it's a mindset. And to achieve that, you would have to shed all your hatred, all your obsessions, all your preconceived notions of good and bad, of black and white, of evil. And I believe the Templars achieved that state.
Some people have accused the Templars of being practitioners of black magic and evil.
That's correct. I've actually been accused of being the devil.
You're the devil?
Yeah, the devil, the Antichrist.
I'm interviewing the devil.
I'm amazed at what people write about or type about at night in their basement. People have to really start to think for themselves. Who created the devil? Who created the hell? It was the church. Because you had to have an alternative to go. If you didn't pay your taxes, if you didn't pay your tithe, where would you go? You wouldn't go to heaven, you'd go to hell. It's a perfect concept. Think about that.
Let's go to Gardena, California. It's Barbara's turn, west of the Rockies. Barbara, go ahead.
Morning.
Hi.
Years ago, I saw this picture. It was Montezuma shaking hands with Cortez, but the handshake was a Masonic handshake, and the stance was a Masonic stance.
Huh.
And what I wanted to know from your guests is if there's anything in the history of his orders that would substantiate the idea that the Aztecs were in association with Masons.
Well, that's a very interesting point. The point that I made earlier on is that a lot of people think that even the conquistadors and the Knights Templar, they wouldn't even made it on shore in North America and the Americas if they weren't received, if there weren't signs, seals, or tokens. And so in terms of them being Masons, no, but they recognized the signs, seals, and tokens of the Enlightened Ones. And this is the whole notion that there were secret societies that came before them and that introduced the natives to the signs, seals, and tokens of those who would come after them. And it's a very viable notion that the conquistadors recognized this, and this is, they took advantage of that. They knew, they had an inkling in terms of the handshakes, the stance, the signs of recognition, the signs of brotherhood and enlightenment, and they used it to their advantage. If somebody would knock on your door that they claimed that they were a relative of yours and possessed a variety of secrets and family secrets that nobody else knew, you would naturally assume that they were a long-lost relative.
Let's go to Mike in Montana. Maybe he's near the treasure. Hi, Mike.
Hello, guys. Hey, real quick, two things. I was talking to a rancher who has a ranch near Miles City, Montana, and he found in a cave on his property, not very far from the Yellowstone River, two corpses that had a sword. One looked a little bit larger, had a sword and an insignia ring, and he turned it into the local museum or whoever, and they come out and took the bodies, but he took the insignia ring off, and he said it was a very ornate ring, but the leather and everything was gone off of the bodies and the sword. And the sword had intricate engravings on it. And secondly, I believe it's the Löwenbräu family of Germany, is building a large complex with underground generators, and it's pretty extensive. It has pillars on the corners of the property with crossed wings.
Wow, the beer company.
Turkey, Montana. Yeah, I believe it's Löwenbräu family.
Are we close, William?
You're close, Mike.
Somebody's on to something here.
Somebody's on to something. You know, this is the whole thing. People ask me why haven't things been discovered? Well, you have to understand that the Templars, they virtually worked physically underground. And so a lot of these things that are buried underground are ultimately going to be discovered. So that's interesting about the two skeletons with the sword.
Oh, my God, that's dramatic. Someone has got to date that sword with the engravings, I think, can't they?
They should be able to. Yep. They should be able to. Now, the lady who called in before talked about recognizable signs, seals, and tokens. If they're recognizable symbols, signs or tokens associated with these two bodies, wouldn't that be something?
You got that right. William, thanks for being on the program. Very enlightening. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was really nice to be on.
It's fascinating work. Templar sanctuaries in North America. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.